I'd like to call this meeting of the House State Affairs Committee to order. The time is 3:15 on Tuesday, February 11th, 2025, and we're here in room 120. Please take this time to silence your cell phones. Our members present today include Representative Moore, Representative Vance, Representative Holland, Representative Himshoot, Vice Chair Representative Story, and myself, Representative Carrick. I notice we're also joined in the room today by Representative Sadler, and our record secretary is Andrew Magnuson. Our moderator from the Juno LAO is Emma Turner. And my committee aide is Stuart Relay. So thank you all as staff for helping us out today. I notice we've also just been joined by Representative McCabe. Today we have four items on our agenda, and we're going to do our very best to get through these in a timely fashion and keep everybody on time so that we can hear all four bills today. We'll be starting today with House Bill 21 on voter pre-registration from Representative Story. And we also have three additional elections-related bills to cover this afternoon. For members' information, we do have the following staff from the Division of Elections available for questions today on any of the bills being considered. Division of Elections Director Carol Beecher, Division of Elections Deputy Director Michaela Thompson, and Assistant Attorney General Tom Flynn, who specializes in election law. And so first up, we do have House Bill 21 from Representative Story. So we'll hear an introductory presentation, and then we have three invited testifiers on this first piece of legislation. Representative Story, if you and your staff would like to put yourselves on the record and go ahead and start your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair Carrick and the members of the State Affairs team. I am Representative Andy Story, proudly representing Juneau, Mendenhall Valley, and also Haynes, Clutquan, Skagway, and Gustavus.
And good afternoon. My name is Honor Miller-Austin, staff to Representative Andy Story.
I just wanted everyone to think about House Bill 21 as a way to increase youth civics education and their knowledge about the voting process by allowing Alaskans who are 16 to pre-register to vote. Currently, it won't change that they still need to be 18 when they actually vote, but this would allow pre-registration. Voting is fundamental to a healthy democracy for our state and our country, and I think getting our youth started is really important. Across the nation, young people age 16 to 29 typically have the lowest voter turnout of any age group. Many adults complain about a lack of civics education to our youth, which contributes to a lack of knowledge by youth about their government and less involvement in the voting process. Currently in Alaska, 90 days before their 18th birthday, youth can register to vote. This is a time when many youth are facing graduation, work, and post-secondary decisions. Many may be moving for school or a job and not sure where to register, so finding the time or the motivation to register can be difficult. House Bill 21 seeks to address these concerns by allowing 16-year-olds to register to vote and providing access to the voting process. At 16, young people are living at home with family or their guardians and attending school, oftentimes taking a government class. This is a key, opportune time to making sure youth have the support they need for filling out the registration process. The questions surrounding registration is confusing, and when they're at home or at school, they have someone who understands the system and can help them through the process. Research shows that when young voters do register, they're likely to turn out to vote, and those who vote develop the habit of voting in elections. States like Florida, Louisiana, California, and Colorado have already implemented pre-registration with success in increasing youth voter turnout. This bill would follow federal law and automatically provide an opportunity to register those youth who get a driver's license at the DMV. A driver's license, as we all know, is a big rite of passage for 16-year-olds, and combining the opportunity to register to vote at the same time provides easy access. In addition, a postage-paid return envelope requesting confirmation of the use address of the pre-registered voter would be mailed out 45 days before their 18th birthday, so their registration card and vote polling place information can be mailed to them upon their receipt. So if you're registering when you're 16, which is a couple years before you're 18, it keeps track of that in the system. And when it gets closer to that triggering time of 18, 45 days, the division would mail them a card. And so it confirms their address, because some people do move, and we want to be making sure the youth is at the home address that they said they were at. So just cues them all up to be ready to go. I think one thing I really wanted to point out, this bill corrects a flaw in our current statute. It establishes this bill before you, House Bill 21, establishes that the address and telephone number of any person under the age of 18 who registers or pre-registers to vote shall remain confidential and not be subject to public view. Currently, 17-year-olds who are pre-registered to vote do not have that protection in our state, and we need to close that loophole. The impact of this bill goes beyond just making voter pre-registration available. By allowing 16-year-olds to pre-register, we are giving access and civic opportunities to prepare the next generation to actively participate in their democracy. This bill bolsters our state's commitment and policies that engage young people in the democratic process. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your interest in civics education. And now my staff will go over the sectional analysis.
Great, thank you. Ms. Miller-Austin.
Thank you, and for the record, my name is Honor Miller-Austin. I will be going over the sectional analysis and fiscal notes for HB 21. So the first section of the bill is about the pre-registration. So a person who is at least 16 and under 18 can pre-register to vote. And instead of the usual registration declaration, they must also declare that they will turn 18 within 2 years of pre-registration, and the division will register that person 90 days before they turn 18 and will send them a voter registration card. The second section is about the confidentiality part that the representative mentioned before. So the address and phone number of anyone under 18 who registers or pre-registers to vote will remain confidential. The fiscal notes, the key points are, the first fiscal note is from the Department of Elections. The bill will allow individuals who are 16 and under to pre-register to vote. And with this update, the voter registration forms and the online system will be incorporated into regular updates and build out of the system, so no fiscal impact is anticipated for this portion. We did talk to the Division of Elections, and they said that they would like to do the mail out of residency verification, so that way there will be a fiscal note with that, considering that we are sending the postage and asking for a return. And the DMV fiscal note, it in federal law says that the DMV has to require the online voter registration option for paper and online, so as a part of this bill, the DMV will need to update several forms and provide staff training to accommodate the new pre-registration process for 16 and 17-year-olds. And training to accommodate the new pre-registration process. So those are the two fiscal notes in the sectional analysis.
Great. Thank you very much for that introductory presentation. I'm going to ask the sponsor of the bill, would you prefer to take some questions now or hear from the invited testimony?
I think I'm fine to take any questions right now.
Okay, great. Do we have questions from committee members? Representative Holland.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you for the presentation and the work on this bill. I've got two areas I was curious about. The first one is, do you have is there a plan or thoughts on how outreach will be done to these 16-year-olds so they can learn about this opportunity and to become more aware of the option they have when they go to DMV and the potentially also the outreach into the civics classes and the courses that students may be taking to just help more people learn about what you're going to be able to give them the option to pursue?
Thank you for that question through the chair. To Rep. Holland, I think some of our invited testimony will talk about how they visualize that happening in school and seeing how it's just like would be a hands-on, practical, real-life application of that really makes school come alive when you're talking about the possibility of voting and then filling out the registration. But there is definitely some education that would need to be done, and there's not really funding in the bill for that.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Great. Thank you for that. The second part of that is I'm curious, once somebody is pre-registered, do they begin receiving the election pamphlet and election information so that they'll begin getting access to this even though they're not old enough to vote, or will they not receive any of the other mailers, election pamphlets and other official documentation until they've actually turned 18?
Thank you for that question through the chair to Rep. Holland. I would believe we've got Director Beecher in the room, and she could answer that question.
We can have Director Beecher come up.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Carol Beecher, Director of the Division of Elections. Regarding the, through the chair, Representative Holland, regarding the official election pamphlet, currently those are mailed to voter households. So if the individual was in a household and the anyone in that household was registered to vote, the household is who gets the pamphlet. Mm-hmm. And same thing with the other election materials that we do mail out.
Right. Thank you.
Do we have Representative Moore?
Through the chair, thank you. My question is kind of two-part, but given the situation that our voter rolls currently have more registered voters than we have eligible voters in the state, the approximate number looks like to be 109%. Won't this bill further exacerbate that issue?
Thank you for that question, Rep. Moore. Through the chair, I think I will turn to the director to best answer that question.
Thank you. Through the chair, Carol Beecher, Director of the Division of Elections. Representative Moore, this group of pre-registered individuals would not be part of the list that would be included in any list that anyone would see due to the confidentiality component of this bill. So they are not considered to be registered voters until they actually turn 18.
Okay. Follow-up?
Follow-up?
Is there a system in place for these, you know, 16, 17, some of them leave once they graduate? Are we expecting the Division of Elections to keep track of more voters and who may or may not be here to vote when it's time? Would that be coming out of this other, you guys are keeping track of that? This is like a new system to keep track of now.
Through the chair, Representative Moore, so we would anticipate handling it essentially the way that we do with the current pre-registration of 17-year-olds. They would be in the pre-registration list until this triggered into our system that they are going to turn 18, and we would work out some kind of a process of notification to verify addresses if that became part of the bill. To ensure that they were still in that address and then register them when they turned 18. Is that answering your question?
Mm-hmm. And so that's not a part of the bill yet, that process?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And through the chair, if I might, we do have an amendment coming. And talking with Director Beecher, she advised me about what needed to be included in the bill to make sure that that happened. So thank you.
Great. Representative Vance.
Thank you. I have a lot of questions around this because I've been advancing the work on cleaning up our voter rolls. And I know that the municipality of Anchorage and the municipality of Juneau rely on the voter rolls from the division. How would this impact their automatic distribution of ballots for their mail-in votes?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, I'm not terribly familiar with what the municipalities do for when they send out, except that they get the voter rolls from us and then use the addresses of the registered voters as a result. But if you wouldn't mind, I would ask to have Michaela Thompson address that in case she knows more about that specific process.
And we do have Michaela Thompson online. Ms. Thompson, could you hear that question?
Yes, I did. For the record, this is Michaela Thompson, Division Operations Manager for the Division of Elections. Through the chair, Representative Vance, the division would only give the municipalities and the boroughs the voter list of active voters who are eligible to be in their election according to our database. So if there were voters that were under 18 years of age, we wouldn't be giving them that information for their election if they were not eligible.
Follow-up. Thank you, Michaela. But we know that there's ongoing concerns about Alaskans who have received ballots from people who lived at their address prior to that who are still on our rolls. And so what kind of assurance would you give by adding more people to the rolls who are not eligible to vote that they would not be getting these ballots?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, I would like to direct this question back to Director Beecher. All I can say is that for the pre-registration, that's an action before someone's registered to vote officially when they're 18, versus the other matters for list maintenance after they're registered to vote already and eligible and over 18 years of age.
Would you like me to add to that?
If you would like to add to that.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Vance. Just to say that as the bill is currently written, the 16-year-olds would not be on the list that would be accessible to the municipalities to send voting materials to because they are pre-registered. They would not yet be registered.
Follow-up. So how much time do you foresee the division putting in to maintain this increase in pre-registration?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, the division is in the process of redoing our voter registration system, and so that is a big reason why this is currently a zero fiscal, because we would build it into our system if this bill passes. The ability to send it out because it would be as they turn 18, they would be registered. It would be triggered by the birth date, which is the same process essentially that we do with the 17-year-olds who pre-register. It's all triggered based on their birth date, and that is how the system would do it. It would probably be a monthly registration process where they would be sent their voter registration card precipitated by ensuring that the address is correct.
Follow-up. So the current fiscal note is that that registration card to ensure that their address is correct. And if what happens if they do not reply?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, it's a little bit speculative, but if that all was in place, if the individual did not reply, they would not be registered.
Madam Chairman, I have a question for the sponsor of the bill.
Follow-up.
Thank you. Representative Story, I'm struggling to understand the overall purpose of this bill when there's nothing prohibiting 18-year-olds from registering in advance to be able to vote on their birthday. But this has a fiscal note. It seems like it's giving more speculation to people who are already concerned about adding more names to the list when there's an effort to have it as clean as possible so that there's no confusion, no speculation of error. What is your overall purpose of this bill?
Thank you. Through the chair, thank you for that question, Rep. Vance. I think one thing that's really important to how I think about it is these youth are in a pending status. You know, their names right now, they're not released. This bill would make sure that the current people who are 17 right now, waiting for those 3 months before they turn 18, it will increase more their confidentiality, closing that loophole. But the whole intent of this bill, like the other states who have gone to do this, is to make students more aware while they are home with their families in school about the voting process. And what that means is we live in a democracy, and they're home. Lots of times when it's your 18th birthday or just before that, you're really busy with your senior items, looking for your post-secondary decisions. And here you are, it's the age 16, you're coming home from school. It's being advertised, talked about. When you go to the DMV, you have an option to vote. And you come home and you start talking about that. And you've got your family there, and it's building this democracy that we want to be strong. And so to me, I see it as involving the youth. Other states that have used this, they do see an increase in younger people voting, and that's what we want, is people involved in our democracy and being aware of current events. And just embracing the system that we have here. And I don't see it adding to the voter rolls because they are in a pending status. And the division seems to have really parameters around that. But thank you for your concern.
We'll take two more questions that I have in the queue. Representative Holland, Representative Moore, and then I believe we'll go to some invited testimony and see if there are further questions after that.
All right. Thank you, through the chair. And this, I hope, is a brief question. In light of the questions that we've just been discussing, which I think are good in terms of the voter rolls and the assurance that the rolls are clean, could you clarify for me, please, for an individual who is pre-registered, whether it's under the current law or the proposed change that just extends it out a little bit further, at the point they turn 18, are they now fully registered and on the rolls with a card sent to them, or at 18, is there something that's mailed that requires them to actually be at the address where that's on record, such that if they're not there, if they don't get it, then they're not added to the rolls, or were they mailed their card and they're on there? Because I think the concern I hear, and it's a good concern, is are we just kind of automatically filling the rolls up with a bunch of people that 2 years prior lived someplace but now don't, and now we've got a bunch more? Or is there a gate at 18 that requires positive action on the part of the 18-year-old to do something in order to validate that they really are there, that they're a valid person at that address?
Thank you very much, through the chair, to Rep. Holland. Yes, Director Beecher has really educated me on that issue, and that it's very important that a card, they could register when they're 16, but it's very important 45 days before their, I think that's the exact date, that they are mailed a card, and they have to, with prepaid envelope so they can return it, that they have to come back with that card and verify they're at that address. And so then it triggers that they would get a card. But if there's no response, and it's also a do not deliver is on that address. And so if they've moved and gone, they will not be registered. They have to return that card in order to get their card mailed to them. And I will just say, Director Beecher, do you have anything to add to that?
Through the chair, Representative Holland, just to say that is part of the proposed amendment. So that's not currently in the bill, but the current process that we do with the 17-year-olds, I can speak to that, which is that a 17-year-old can pre-register, essentially, or register to vote 90 days prior to Election Day. And when they do that, our system looks at their birth date, and it marks it that they are going to turn 18 on Election Day, so that when they register 90 days prior or within that window, they are sent a voter registration card, and then when they go to vote and they're registered, so they're on the list, they're on the register, when they go to vote, then their name would be on the register and it must match. If their birth date was one day after election, they would not be on the list and would not be able to vote.
Representative Moore.
Yes, thank you, Chair Carrick. Through the chair, in your research with other states who have implemented this, has there been issues with those pre-registered voters trying to vote early, and has there been a penalty? Is that something that you have thought of with this bill? Would there be a penalty for them trying to go and vote beforehand, before 18?
Through the chair, to Rep. Moore, they couldn't vote before they were 18 because they would not get a card the way it was triggered, so that would not be happening. They have to be 18 before they would get their card to vote. And I do not know of any other states that have had trouble with it, but I can certainly reach out.
Great, thank you.
All right. At this time, I'm going to ask the bill sponsor and Director Beecher to yield the testifier table, since we do have an in-person invited testimony. For our invited testifiers today, we're going to ask folks to keep their comments to 3 minutes or less. And after we do all invited testimony, we have three folks on this piece of legislation. We'll do another round of questions and then set the bill aside to get to the other bills that we have today. I just want to also note for the committee members, this will be just a first hearing on all the bills that we're hearing today. So if you have outstanding questions that don't get answered today, you will have multiple bites at the apple. First up for invited testimony on House Bill 21 is Marion Clough with the League of Women Voters in Juneau. If you'd like to put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Honorable Chair Carrick and honorable members of the Alaska House of State Affairs. I'm Marion Clough, and I have lived in Alaska for 42 years, and I'm here today as a representative of the Alaska League of Women Voters and the Juneau League of Women Voters, and testifying in support of HB 21. The League of Women Voters is nonpartisan. Our position as the Alaska League of Women Voters is to encourage maximum interest and participation in the electoral process. We believe that HB 21, voter pre-registration for 16-year-olds, encourages civic engagement and encourages participation. Pre-registration promotes good voting habits by allowing a young person to be involved in civic education early when they have family support to stimulate discussion while still living at home. HB 21 helps to eliminate barriers to voting, encourages young people to realize they have a voice as our future leaders, gives them the confidence and tools to exercise their right. The League of Women Voters promotes civic education, not who or what to vote for, but why and how to vote. An example of one of the nonpartisan programs supported by the League is the Juno's Capital Students Capital Visits. It's an education program where we have eighth graders learn all about the Alaska government. The students visit the Capitol and the courthouse, learning about legislation, legislative, executive, and judicial branches, including participating in a mock committee hearing of a real bill, learning the proper procedures to testify and become an informed voting citizen. In fact, we were in the Capitol today. I don't know if you noticed on the stairs. Pre-registering youth at 16 prior to their reaching their 18th birthday eases the process for our youth so they can become an active, engaged voter. I encourage you to support adoption, or as it goes along, HB 21, to advocate for our future generation of voters. And thank you for your time today, and thank you for your public service and all your hard work.
Thank you, Ms. Clough. We'll now go online to Amy Galloway in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Chair Carrick and committee members. My name is Amy Galloway. I'm a retired high school civics teacher from the Fairbanks North Shore Borough and was the 2020 Alaska Teacher of the Year. Today I am representing myself, and all opinions are my own and not on behalf of any entity. So I'm speaking in support of HB 21, voter pre-registration for minors, because allowing nonpartisan early voter registration at 16 can empower students to be more engaged citizens by demystifying the election process. I think it can make the registration process more relevant for students because it then can be paired with increased school and family support. 25 years, I taught the election process in detail to high school students from all walks of life, and one experience students had in common was confusion with our multifaceted process. students are hungry to understand the process and engage, but the complexity of the system necessitates an approach that builds partnerships and collaboration between schools, students, and families. And I believe that pre-registration can help facilitate that. Youth want to know how the process works. They just need help. Our job is to prepare them for the electoral process. Setting the pre-registration age at 16 is a powerful tool to help with that. So I taught about voter registration monthly. I would hand out registration forms on students' birthdays. I always told them they could register 90 days before their 18th birthday. And our school held multiple registration drives a year. Yet, because of the current age restriction, and because teenagers need to be told things at least 10 times, it was always a trickle of student registration. If we could have pre-registration drives after we complete civics lessons like our mock legislatures or during parent-teacher conferences so that we can partner with families, and every year during our local state, during our local elections or other years during state and national, we can make learning and voting more relevant. For example, last year in my Alaska Studies class, when we were talking about our local elections, I always had assignments where students had to go home and talk to their parents about what we were learning. On the day after Election Day, I had three students, I wrote this down because it was such a landmark for me. I had three students tell me that they actually took their parents to the polls. And for one of them, their mother had never ever voted in a local election before, but because of what we were doing in class, her student got her to the polls. Now imagine if that student, if students could register alongside these activities, we just build stronger and stronger connections. Another example is during an actual parent-teacher conference where a parent asked me to explain how something worked to help them register to vote. Imagine if the senior could register to vote along with their parents at the same time. So I believe that doing civic in schools with students and families and having pre-registration will help increase civic engagement and the process. I highly encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Galloway. And now go to Madison Areola with Anchorage Youth Vote. Ms. Areola, if you could provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Madison Areola, and I live in Eagle River, and I represent Anchorage Youth Vote. I have been a part of Anchorage Youth Vote since my freshman year of high school, and I am testifying in support of House Bill 21. Voting is a powerful tool used to determine how we want our democracy led. Democracy is a value that means something to everyone, but not just adults. In junior year of high school, at around age 16, we learn about U.S. history. We learn that it took years to even make voting equal to all for those who were 18 years old. Despite not being of the voting age, Anchorage Youth Vote works to empower the youth, and we know that information is key in allowing everyone to have these resources, because democracy is what matters. Matters.vote states that young people ages 18 to 29 have the lowest for voter turnout at any age group. They all have the right to vote, so why is this age group the lowest? There is obviously an issue and a gap at stake, and the pathway into solving that issue is expanding our resources into why that is happening and how we can inform people they do have a voice in the election. Many people, which I've even felt before, feel that their voice doesn't matter because they think, as a minority, that their vote will not add much to the number, and it demotivates them to even want to participate in a future election. Now, if we allow 16-year-olds to pre-register to vote, that means more likely we will finally see that youth feel that their legislation actually cares to make laws surrounding their life and their voice and count to democracy. Now, the purpose of this bill is a value here. What do you value? We value democracy and democracy first. And as Anchorage Youth Vote members, we have dedicated our lives and years to learning about democracy and spreading why democracy matters. And we want our voice represented in return. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Areola. And I'll We're right on schedule currently. Do members have questions for any of our invited testifiers today or the bill sponsor? Great. You're an easy group today. So we're going to set this bill aside. We will be bringing House Bill 21 back before the committee at a future hearing. And please feel free to direct questions to the bill sponsor's office or my office, and we'll do our best to get answers to committee members. At this time, we're going to switch to House Bill 43. We'll take a brief at ease just to get set up with our next presenter. I'd like to call this meeting of the House State Affairs Committee to order. The time is 3:15 on Tuesday, February 11th, 2025, and we're here in room 120. Please take this time to silence your cell phones. Our members present today include Representative Moore, Representative Vance, Representative Holland, Representative Hemshute, Vice Chair Representative Story, and myself, Representative Carrick. I notice we're also joined in the room today by Representative Sadler, and our record secretary is Andrew Magnuson. Our moderator from the Juno LIO is Emma Turner. And my committee aide is Stuart Relay. So thank you all as staff for helping us out today. I notice we've also just been joined by Representative McCabe. Today we have four items on our agenda, and we're going to do our very best to get through these in a timely fashion and keep everybody on time so that we can hear all four bills today. We'll be starting today with House Bill 21 on voter pre-registration from Representative Story, and we also have three additional elections-related bills to cover this afternoon. For members' information, we do have the following staff from the Division of Elections available for questions today on any of the bills being considered. Division of Elections Director Carol Beecher, Division of Elections Deputy Director Michaela Thompson, and Assistant Attorney General Tom Flynn, who specializes in election law. And so first up, we do have House Bill 21 from Representative Story. So we'll hear an introductory presentation, and then we have three invited testifiers on this first piece of legislation. Representative Story, if you and your staff would like to put yourselves on the record and go ahead and start your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair Carrick and the members of the State Affairs team. I am Representative Andy Story, proudly representing Juneau, Mendenhall Valley, and also Haynes, Clutchwan, Skagway, and Gustavus.
And good afternoon. My name is Honor Miller-Austin, staff to Representative Andy Story.
I just wanted everyone to think about House Bill 21 as a way to increase youth civics education and their knowledge about the voting process by allowing Alaskans who are 16 to pre-register to vote. Currently, it won't change that they still need to be 18 when they actually vote, but this would allow pre-registration. Voting is fundamental to a healthy democracy for our state and our country, and I think getting our youth started is really important. Across the nation, young people age 16 to 29 typically have the lowest voter turnout of any age group. Many adults complain about a lack of civics education to our youth, which contributes to a lack of knowledge by youth about their government and less involvement in the voting process. Currently in Alaska, 90 days before their 18th birthday, youth can register to vote. This is a time when many youth are facing graduation, work, and post-secondary decisions. Many may be moving for school or a job and not sure where to register, so finding the time or the motivation to register can be difficult. House Bill 21 seeks to address these concerns by allowing 16-year-olds to register to vote and providing access to the voting process. At 16, young people are living at home with family or their guardians and attending school, oftentimes taking a government class. This is a key, opportune time to making sure youth have the support they need for filling out the registration process. The questions surrounding registration is confusing. And when they're at home or at school, they have someone who understands the system and can help them through the process. Research shows that when young voters do register, they're likely to turn out to vote. And those who vote develop the habit of voting in elections. States like Florida, Louisiana, California, and Colorado have already implemented pre-registration with success, increasing youth voter turnout. This bill would follow federal law and automatically provide an opportunity to register those youth who get a driver's license at the DMV. A driver's license, as we all know, is a big rite of passage for 16-year-olds, and combining the opportunity to register to vote at the same time provides easy access. In addition, a postage-paid return envelope requesting confirmation of the youth's address of the pre-registered voter would be mailed out 45 days before their 18th birthday, so their registration card and polling place information can be mailed to them upon their receipt. So if you're registering when you're 16, which is a couple years before you're 18, it keeps track of that in the system. And when it gets closer to that triggering time of 18, 45 days, the division would mail them a card. And so it confirms their address, because some people do move, and we want to be making sure the youth is at the home address that they said they were at. So just cues them all up to be ready to go. I think one thing I really wanted to point out, this bill corrects a flaw in our current statute. It establishes this bill before you, House Bill 21, establishes that the address and telephone number of any person under the age of 18 who registers or pre-registers to vote shall remain confidential and not be subject to public view. Currently, 17-year-olds who are pre-registered to vote do not have that protection in our state, and we need to close that loophole. The impact of this bill goes beyond just making voter pre-registration available. By allowing 16-year-olds to pre-register, we are giving access and civic opportunities to prepare the next generation to actively participate in their democracy. This bill bolsters our state's commitment and policies that engage young people in the democratic process. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your interest in civics education. And now my staff will go over the sectional analysis.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Miller-Austin.
Thank you. And for the record, my name is Honor Miller-Austin. I will be going over the sectional analysis and fiscal notes for HB 21. So the first section of the bill is about the pre-registration. So a person who is at least 16 and under 18 can pre-register to vote. And instead of the usual registration declaration, they must also declare that they will turn 18 within 2 years of pre-registration, and the division will register that person 90 days before they turn 18 and will send them a voter registration card. The second section is about the confidentiality part that the representative mentioned before. So the address and phone number of anyone under 18 who registers or pre-registers to vote will remain confidential. The fiscal notes, the key points are, the first fiscal note is from the Department of Elections. The bill will allow individuals who are 16 and under to pre-register to vote. And with this update, the voter registration forms and the online system will be incorporated into regular updates and build out of the system, so no fiscal impact is anticipated for this portion. We did talk to the Division of Elections, and they said that they would like to do the mail out of residency verification, so that way there will be a fiscal note with that, considering that we are sending the postage and asking for a return. And the DMV fiscal note, it in federal law says that the DMV has to require the online voter registration option for paper and online, so as a part of this bill, the DMV will need to update several forms and provide staff training to accommodate the new pre-registration process for 16 and 17-year-olds. And training to accommodate the new pre-registration process. So, in that, Those are the two fiscal notes and the sectional analysis.
Great. Thank you very much for that introductory presentation. I'm going to ask the sponsor of the bill, would you prefer to take some questions now or hear from the invited testimony?
I think I'm fine to take any questions right now.
Okay, great. Do we have questions from committee members? Representative Holland.
Thank you. Through the chair, thank you for the presentation and the work on this bill. I've got two areas I was curious about. The first one is, do you have is there a plan or thoughts on how outreach will be done to these 16-year-olds so they can learn about this opportunity and to become more aware of the option they have when they go to DMV and the potentially also the outreach into the civics classes and the courses that students may be taking to just help more people learn about what you're going to be able to give them the option to pursue?
Thank you for that question through the chair. To Rep. Holland, I think some of our invited testimony will talk about how they visualize that happening in school and seeing how it's just like would be a hands-on, practical, real-life application of that really makes school come alive when you're talking about the possibility of voting and then filling out the registration. But there is definitely some education that would need to be done, and there's not really funding in the bill for that.
Follow-up? Great. Thank you for that. The second part of that is I'm curious, once somebody is pre-registered, do they begin receiving the election pamphlet and election information so that they'll begin getting access to this even though they're not old enough to vote, or will they not receive any of the other mailers, election pamphlets, and other official documentation until they've actually turned 18?
Thank you for that question through the chair. To Rep. Holland, I would believe we've got Director Beecher in the room, and she could answer that question.
Sure. We can have Director Beecher come up.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Carol Beecher, Director of the Division of Elections. Regarding the, through the chair, Representative Holland, regarding the official election pamphlet, currently those are mailed to voter households. So if the individual was in a household and the anyone in that household was registered to vote, the household is who gets the pamphlet. Mm-hmm. And same thing with the other election materials that we do mail out.
Do we have Representative Moore?
Hi, through the chair, thank you. My question is kind of two-part, but given the situation that our voter rolls currently have more registered voters than we have eligible voters in the state, the approximate number looks like to be 109%. Won't this bill further exacerbate that issue?
Thank you for that question, Rep. Moore. Through the chair, I think I will turn to the director to best answer that question.
Thank you. Through the chair, Carol Beecher, Director of the Division of Elections. Representative Moore, this group of pre-registered individuals would not be part of the list that would be included in any list that anyone would see due to the confidentiality component of this bill. So they are not considered to be registered voters until they actually turn 18.
Okay. Follow-up?
Follow-up?
Is there a system in place for these, you know, 16, 17, some of them leave once they graduate? Are we expecting the Division of Elections to keep track of more voters and who may or may not be here to vote when it's time? Would that be coming out of this other, you guys are keeping track of that? This is like a new system to keep track of now.
Through the chair, Representative Moore, so we would anticipate handling it essentially the way that we do with the current pre-registration of 17-year-olds. They would be in the pre-registration list until this is triggered into our system that they are going to turn 18, and we would work out some kind of a process of notification to verify addresses if that became part of the bill. To ensure that they were still in that address and then register them when they turned 18. Is that answering your question?
Mm-hmm. And so that's not a part of the bill yet, that process?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And through the chair, if I might, we do have an amendment coming. And talking with Director Beecher, she advised me about what needed to be included in the bill to make sure that that happened. So thank you.
Great. Representative Vance.
Thank you. I have a lot of questions around this because I've been advancing the work on cleaning up our voter rolls. And I know that the Municipality of Anchorage and the Municipality of Juneau rely on the voter rolls from the division. How would this impact their automatic distribution of ballots for their mail-in votes?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, I'm not terribly familiar with what the municipalities do for when they send out, except that they get the voter rolls from us and then use the addresses of the registered voters as a result. But if you wouldn't mind, I would ask to have Michaela Thompson address that in case she knows more about that specific process.
And we do have Michaela Thompson online. Ms. Thompson, could you hear that question?
Yes, I did. For the record, this is Michaela Thompson, Division Operations Manager for the Division of Elections. Through the chair, Representative Vance, the division would only give the municipalities and the boroughs the voter list of active voters who are eligible to be in their election according to our database. So if there were voters that were under 18 years of age, we wouldn't be giving them that information for their election. They were not eligible.
Follow-up. Thank you, Michaela. But we know that there's ongoing concerns about Alaskans who have received ballots from people who lived at their address prior to that who are still on our rolls. And so what kind of assurance would you give by adding more people to the rolls who are not eligible to vote that they would not be getting these ballots?
Through the chair, in advance, I would like to direct this question back to Director Beecher. All I can say is that for the pre-registration, that's an action before someone's registered to vote officially when they're 18, versus the other matters for list maintenance after they're registered to vote already and eligible and over 18 years of age.
Would you like me to add to that?
If you would like to add to that.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Vance. Just to say that as the bill is currently written, the 16-year-olds would not be on the list that would be accessible to the municipalities to send voting materials to because they are pre-registered. They would not yet be registered.
Follow-up. So how much time do you foresee the division putting in to maintain this increase in pre-registration?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, the division is in the process of redoing our voter registration system, and so that is a big reason why this is currently a zero fiscal, because we would build it into our system if this bill passes. The ability to send it out because it would be as they turn 18, they would be registered. It would be triggered by the birth date, which is the same process essentially that we do with the 17-year-olds who pre-register. It's all triggered based on their birth date, and that is how the system would do it. It would probably be a monthly registration process where they would be sent their voter registration card precipitated by ensuring that the address is correct.
Follow-up. So the current fiscal note is that registration card to ensure that their address is correct. And what happens if they do not reply?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, it's a little bit speculative, but if that all was in place, if the individual did not reply, they would not be registered.
Madam Chairman, I have a question for the sponsor of the bill.
Follow-up.
Thank you. Representative Story, I'm struggling to understand the overall purpose of this bill when there's nothing prohibiting 18-year-olds from registering in advance to be able to vote on their birthday. But this has a fiscal note. It seems like it's giving more speculation to people who are already concerned about adding more names to the list when there's an effort to have it as clean as possible so that there's no confusion, no speculation of error. What is your overall purpose of this bill?
Thank you. Through the chair, thank you for that question, Rep. Vance. I think one thing that's really important to how I think about it is these youth are in a pending status. You know, their names right now, they're not released. This bill would make sure that the current people who are 17 right now, waiting for those 3 months before they turn 18, it will increase more their confidentiality, closing that loophole. But the whole intent of this bill, like the other states who have gone to do this, is to make students more aware while they are home with their families in school about the voting process. And what that means is we live in a democracy. And they're home, lots of times when it's your 18th birthday or just before that, you're really busy with your senior items, looking for your post-secondary decisions. And here you are, it's the age 16, you're coming home from school. It's being advertised, talked about. When you go to the DMV, you have an option to vote. And you come home and you start talking about that. And you've got your family there. And it's building this democracy that we want to be strong. And so to me, I see it as involving the youth. Other states that have used this, they do see an increase in younger people voting. And that's what we want, is people involved in our democracy and being aware of current events and just embracing the system that we have here. And I don't see it adding to the voter rolls because they are in a pending status. And the division seems to have really parameters around that. But thank you for your concern.
We'll take two more questions that I have in the queue. Representative Holland, Representative Moore, and then I believe we'll go to some invited testimony and see if there are further questions after that.
All right. Thank you, through the chair. And this, I hope, is a brief question. In light of the questions that we've just been discussing, which I think are good in terms of the voter rolls and the assurance that the rolls are clean, could you clarify for me, please, for an individual who is pre-registered, whether it's under the current law or the proposed change that just extends it out a little bit further, at the point they turn 18, are they now fully registered and on the rolls with a card sent to them? Or at 18, is there something that's mailed that requires them to actually be at the address where that's on record, such that if they're not there, if they don't get it, then they're not added to the rolls? Or were they mailed their card and they're on there? Because I think the concern I hear, and it's a good concern, is are we just kind of automatically filling the rolls up with a bunch of people that 2 years prior lived someplace but now don't, and now we've got a bunch more? Or is there a gate at 18 that requires positive action on the part of the 18-year-old to do something in order to validate that they really are there, that they're a valid person at that address?
Thank you very much, through the chair, to Rep. Holland. Yes, Director Beecher has really educated me on that issue, and that it's very important that a card, they could register when they're 16, but it's very important 45 days before their, I think that's the exact date, that they are mailed a card, and they have to, with prepaid envelopes so they can return it, that they have to come back with that card and verify they're at that address. And so then it triggers that they would get a card. But if there's no response, and it's also a do not deliver is on that address. And so if they've moved and gone, they will not be registered. They have to return that card in order to get their card mailed to them. And I will just say, Director Beecher, do you have anything to add to that?
Through the chair, Representative Holland, just to say that is part of the proposed amendment. So that's not currently in the bill, but the current process that we do with the 17-year-olds, I can speak to that, which is that a 17-year-old can pre-register, essentially, or register to vote 90 days prior to Election Day. And when they do that, our system looks at their birth date and it marks it that they are going to turn 18 on Election Day, so that they, when they register 90 days prior or within that window, they are sent a voter registration card. And then when they go to vote and they're registered, so they're on the list, they're on the register, when they go to vote, then their name would be on the register and it must match. If their birth date was one day after election, they would not be on the list and would not be able to vote.
Representative Moore.
Yes, thank you, Chair Carrick. Through the chair, in your research with other states who have implemented this, has there been issues with those pre-registered voters trying to vote early, and has there been a penalty? Is that something that you have thought of with this bill? Would there be a penalty for them trying to go and vote beforehand, before 18?
Through the chair, to Rep. Moore, they couldn't vote before they were 18 because they would not get a card the way it was triggered. So that would not be happening. They have to be 18 before they would get their card to vote. And I do not know of any other states that have had trouble with it, but I can certainly reach out.
Great, thank you.
All right. At this time, I'm going to ask the bill sponsor and Director Beecher to yield the testifier table, since we do have an in-person invited testimony. For our invited testifiers today, we're going to ask folks to keep their comments to 3 minutes or less. And after we do all invited testimony, we have three folks on this piece of legislation. We'll do another round of questions and then set the bill aside to get to the other bills that we have today. I just want to also note for the committee members, this will be just a first hearing on all the bills that we're hearing today. So if you have outstanding questions that don't get answered today, you will have multiple bites at the apple. First up for invited testimony on House Bill 21 is Marion Clow with the League of Women Voters in Juneau. If you'd like to put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Honorable Chair Carrick and honorable members of the Alaska House of State Affairs. I'm Marion Clow, and I have lived in Alaska for 42 years, and I'm here today as a representative of the Alaska League of Women Voters and the Juneau League of Women Voters, and testifying in support of HB 21. The League of Women Voters is nonpartisan. Our position as the Alaska League of Women Voters is to encourage maximum interest and participation in the electoral process. We believe that HB 21, voter pre-registration for 16-year-olds, encourages civic engagement and encourages participation. Pre-registration promotes good voting habits by allowing a young person to be involved in civic education early when they have family support to stimulate discussion while still living at home. HB 21 helps to eliminate barriers to voting, encourages young people to realize they have a voice as our future leaders, gives them the confidence and tools to exercise their right. The League of Women Voters promotes civic education, not who or what to vote for, but why and how to vote. An example of one of the nonpartisan programs supported by the League is the Juneau's Capital Students Capital Visits. It's an education program where we have eighth graders learn all about the Alaska government. The students visit the Capitol and the courthouse, learning about legislation, legislative, executive, and judicial branches, including participating in a mock committee hearing of a real bill, learning the proper procedures to testify and become an informed voting citizen. In fact, we were in the Capitol today. I don't know if you noticed. On the stairs. Pre-registering youth at 16 prior to their reaching their 18th birthday eases the process for our youth so they can become an active, engaged voter. I encourage you to support adoption or as it goes along, HB 21, to advocate for our future generation of voters. And thank you for your time today. And thank you for your public service and all your hard work.
Thank you, Ms. Clow. We'll now go online to Amy Galloway in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Chair Carrick and committee members. My name is Amy Galloway. I'm a retired high school civics teacher from the Fairbanks Snarstow Borough and was the 2020 OASCA Teacher of the Year. Today, I'm representing myself, and all opinions are my own and not on behalf of any entity. So I'm speaking in support of HB 21, voter pre-registration for minors, because allowing nonpartisan early voter registration at 16 can empower students to be more engaged citizens by demystifying the election process. I think it can make the registration process more relevant for students because it then can be paired with increased school and family support. 25 years, I taught the election process in detail to high school students from all walks of life, and one experience students had in common was confusion with our multifaceted process. Students are hungry to understand the process and engage, but the complexity of the system necessitates an approach that builds partnerships and collaboration between schools, students, and families, and I believe that pre-registration can help facilitate that. If they want to know how the process works, they just need help. Our job is to prepare them for the electoral process. Setting the pre-registration age at 16 is a powerful tool to help with that. So I taught about voter registration monthly. I would hand out registration forms on students' birthdays. I always told them they could register 90 days before their 18th birthday. And our school held multiple registration drives a year. Yet, because of the current age restriction, and because teenagers need to be told things at least 10 times, it was always a trickle of student registration. If we could have pre-registration drives after we complete civics lessons like our mock legislatures or during parent-teacher conferences so that we can partner with families, and every year during our local state, during our local elections or other years during state and national, we can make learning and voting more relevant. For example, last year in my Alaska Studies class, when we were talking about our local elections, I always had assignments where students had to go home and talk to their parents about what we were learning. On the day after Election Day, I had three students. I wrote this down because it was such a landmark for me. I had three students tell me that they actually took their parents to the polls. And for one of them, their mother had never ever voted in a local election before, but because of what we were doing in class, her student got her to the polls. Now imagine if that student, if students could register alongside these activities, we just build stronger and stronger connections. Another example is during an actual parent-teacher conference where a parent asked me to explain how something worked to help them register to vote. Imagine if the senior could register to vote along with their parents at the same time. So I believe that doing civics in schools with students and families and having pre-registration will help increase civic engagement and the process. I highly encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Galloway. And now go to Madison Areola with Anchorage Youth Vote. Ms. Areola, if you could provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Madison Areola, and I live in Eagle River, and I represent Anchorage Youth Vote. I have been a part of Anchorage Youth Vote since my freshman year of high school, and I am testifying in support of House Bill 21. Voting is a powerful tool used to determine how we want our democracy led. Democracy is a value that means something to everyone, but not just adults. In junior year of high school, at around age 16, we learn about U.S. history. We learn that it took years to even make voting equal to all for those who were 18 years old. Despite not being of the voting age, Anchorage Youth Vote works to empower the youth, and we know that information is key in allowing everyone to have these resources to democracy is what matters. Matters.vote states that young people ages 18 to 29 have the lowest for voter turnout at any age group. They all have the right to vote, so why is this age group the lowest? There is obviously an issue and a gap at stake, and the pathway into solving that issue is expanding our resources into why that is happening and how we can inform people they do have a voice in the election. Many people, which I even felt before, feel that their voice doesn't matter because they think, as a minority, that their vote will not add much to the number, and it demotivates them to even want to participate in a future election. Now, if we allow 16-year-olds to pre-register to vote, that means more likely we will finally see that you feel that their legislation actually cares to make laws surrounding their life and their voice and count to democracy. Now, the purpose of this bill is a value here. What do you value? We value democracy and democracy first. And as Anchorage Youth Vote members, we have dedicated our lives and years to learning about democracy and spreading why democracy matters. And we want our voice represented in return. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Ariola. We're right on schedule currently. Do members have questions for any of our invited testifiers today or the bill sponsor? Great. You're an easy group today. So we're going to set this bill aside. We will be bringing House Bill 21 back before the committee at a future hearing. And please feel free to direct questions to the bill sponsor's office or my office, and we'll do our best to get answers to committee members. At this time, we're going to switch to House Bill 43. We'll take a brief at ease just to get set up with our next presenter. House State Affairs Committee back on the record, and next up we have House Bill 43 from Representative Shragi's office, who will be introducing the bill over the phone. Am I still correct? Okay, great. And his staff, Eric Gunderson, who will walk through a presentation on the bill. We also have invited testimony from Michael Garvey, Policy Director at ACLU Alaska. So go ahead, Rep. Shragi. Hopefully you can hear us and put yourself on the record and start your presentation.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Garrick and members of the committee for scheduling this bill early in the session and for your attention to this matter. Thank you also for your accommodating me participating telephonically today. I know it's non-standard and not ideal, but having just welcomed our newest member to the family, it's important to be here and provide some support. So again, just really appreciate the accommodation. And thank you for that. My name is Calvin Shragi. I represent House District 12, Lower Hillside here in Anchorage. With me today, I have Eric Gunderson, my chief of staff, who is here in place of my other staffer, Amanda Endemo, who is out with the illness that's currently circulating the Capitol. Please know that in the future, Amanda will look forward to working with you all as we move this bill through the committee process. If it's all right with the chair, I'd like to begin with my sponsor statement and then proceed from there.
Go ahead, Representative Shragi.
Thank you, Chair Carrick. So House Bill 43 seeks to ensure that every eligible Alaskan voter has the opportunity to participate in Alaska's elections in a safe, secure, and accessible manner while ensuring valid votes are not rejected due to minor correctable errors. HB 43 accomplishes this by modernizing Alaska's elections, eliminating the witness signature requirement, creating a ballot steering process, extending early voting to 30 days before an election, and implementing same-day voter registration, among other changes. Now, the purpose of HB 43 is to remove barriers to the ballot box at every stage of Alaska's election process, while promoting transparency and bolstering the integrity of Alaska's elections. I think we've all read much of the news over the last few years around some of the issues around our elections. This bill aims to address some of the most critical ones in our view, and is a starting place for this committee to consider. And with that, I think I'd like to turn things over, again, with the chair's indulgence, to my chief of staff to go over the presentation that we have prepared for you today, and then the sectional analysis of the bill.
Great. Mr. Gunderson.
Thank you. For the record, Eric Gunderson, staff representative Schrage. Through the chair, I'll now run through a presentation of House Bill 43, providing an overview of some of the primary components of the bill. House Bill 43 is an act relating to elections, relating to voters, relating to the crime of unlawful interference with voting, and providing for an effective date. So the goals of this legislation are to address current barriers for eligible Alaskan voters, clarify the voter registration process while maintaining the integrity of our election system. Key changes in House Bill 43 include adjusting voter registration deadline to allow for eligible Alaskan voters to register to vote within 30 days of an election, extending early voting from 15 days prior to an election to 30 days prior to an election, eliminating the witness signature requirement, establishing prepaid postage for by-mail absentee ballots, creating a process for voters to cure deficiencies on absentee ballots, such as a failure to sign or provide a valid identifier. House Bill 43 allows voters to register or update their voter registration within 30 days of an election. For voters who do register within 30 days of an election, this bill requires that they vote either by question ballot, special needs, or by an absentee ballot, which provides the Division of Elections the opportunity to confirm their eligibility on top of the initial voter registration. This practice is already allowed by law for presidential elections. Current law allows qualified voters to vote early at designated stations or absentee in-person voting locations up to 15 days prior to an election. House Bill 43 extends this period from 15 days to 30 days while eliminating the term absentee voting station and reclassifying it under the existing category of early voting station. House Bill 43 also provides the Division of Elections the regulatory authority to designate which stations are operated for persons to vote absentee. Current law requires that absentee ballots be signed by both the voter and a witness. This creates an additional barrier for many Alaskans, including those in rural communities and our overseas military members. Under current rules, this does not provide meaningful voter integrity protections, as the Division of Elections cannot verify if the signer is eligible to act as a valid witness. We've heard testimony that ballots are counted even if they include just a marking in the witness signature line, and there are instances of voters putting names such as Mickey Mouse in that space, and the ballots are still counted. And here's a list of the 10 states which require a witness or notary signature on returned or absentee ballots. Of those, Alaska is one of only 7 states that still require the signature of at least one witness in addition to the voter signature on mailed ballots. House Bill 43 proposes requiring prepaid postage for absentee by-mail ballots. And here's a list of the other 19 states that offer prepaid postage. House Bill 43 establishes a process that would allow for curing ballots. These ballots are rejected due to a missing signature or a lack of voter identifier. House Bill 43 also establishes protocols for the Division of Elections to contact the voter, explain the ballot deficiency, and provide necessary information in order to have their ballot cured and counted. Roughly two-thirds of states require election officials to notify voters if they're unable to verify a voter's identity or signature and offer the opportunity to cure it. Thank you. Through the chair, I can now go over the sectional analysis if the chair would like, but I also know we're on a tight time frame.
Thank you, Mr. Gunderson. I think we're going to perhaps hold the sectional for the next hearing and just open it up to questions on this legislation. All right, Representative Holland, I was like, we've got to have one. That has to be the case.
Sounds good. Thank you. And through the chair, and Mr. Gunderson, going back to, I'm looking for a number here, I don't see it, the voter registration changes here between current law and proposed changes. It says under the proposed change, it allows voters to register to vote within 30 days of elections. Does that include registering to vote up to and including election day?
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
I had a question as well, Mr. Gunderson, on the ballot curing provision. Since the legislation would eliminate the witness signature requirement, the ballot curing would still be a valuable tool for the insufficient voter identification. And can you provide an example of what that might look like?
Through the chair, Eric, for the record, Eric Gunderson, staff to Representative Schrage. Even with the elimination of the witness signature, there are various reasons that a ballot could be thrown out, including a missing identifier, missing signature, or even what we've seen often is people will put the date that they've signed on the identifier, which is in turn had their ballot rejected. Once the ballot is rejected under a cure process, the Division of Elections will canvass the ballot, set it aside, and then contact the voter. House Bill 43 provides a few different channels for them to do that, including by mail, by phone, by email, by text. And this might also be a question for Director Beecher if she has any additional clarification.
I think that's actually sufficient examples for me. I'll go to Representative Vance.
Thank you. I have a lot of questions. I'll try to go easy on it.
Thank you.
Let's begin with the witness signature, because in your opening you said that this would increase election integrity. So if you remove the witness signature, what measures does the bill have written in place to verify that the voter is indeed that voter?
Through the chair, Representative Eric Gunderson, staff to Representative Schrage. Could you clarify, is this just for absentee ballots that you're referencing or the electoral process broadly?
Through the chair, the absentee special needs and all the by mail are required to have a witness signature. That is to verify that the voter is indeed the one who's registered to vote. By removing the witness signature to confirm that the voter is who they're appearing to be, if you remove that, what protections do you have that can confirm they're not someone else?
I'm going to use my lifeline, Director Beecher, as there are multiple other protocols existing in statute around absentee ballots that already provide that level of security outside of the witness signature.
Director Beecher, welcome back.
Thank you. Carol Beecher, Director of the Division of Elections, for the record. Through the chair, Representative Vance, if you remove the witness signature, then on an absentee ballot or any of those by mail options, the only verification would be the identifiers that were provided by the voter and that they sign under oath that in penalty of perjury that they are telling the truth. So there is no signature verification process within the state elections.
Follow up. So several years ago, there was a data breach of 113,000 Alaskans that included all the personal identifiers that is now on the dark web. Could a bad actor utilized this information to obtain an absentee ballot and send it in and vote appearing as that individual.
Through the chair, Representative Vance, speaking to the hypothetical, it is possible that an individual could apply for an absentee ballot if they had all of the information required to apply, which would include that they were a registered voter in our system. So it is possible with the information that they had that they could do that if a bad actor.
Thank you for that. This is why I asked the question of additional securities by removing the witness signature. I do have follow-up questions on different topics.
Sure. New topic.
We could go on. We've gone on this one in other times. I will save for another day. But can we talk about the registration 30, expanding the 15-day registration to 30 days? So essentially what this bill is doing is making a voting month. Can you provide the justification for expanding the time, the days to vote early to an entire month?
I think this is a question that I'm best suited to address, if that's all right, Chair Jarek.
Yep, please go ahead.
Thank you so much. And to Representative Vance, can I assume that you're talking about expanding the early voting period? Is that the basis of your question, the early voting period?
Yes, Representative Schottky.
Thank you. Through the chair, yeah, I think this really stemmed from the high demand for early voting that we saw in the most recent election, where throughout the early voting period, we saw lines of up to 2 hours for Alaskan voters to be able to have their vote cast in that early voting period. Just given that increased demand and that shifting preference towards early voting in order to expand access and hopefully reduce the peak demand in that short period, by expanding that window, we can reduce the daily number of voters showing up at early voting locations and just make that access greater for again, Alaskan voters. You know, someone who's off on a lunch break or otherwise has a very busy schedule may not always be able to go and spend 2 hours waiting to early vote or to show up on election day. Maybe they're leaving town, and so this would allow for them to, frankly, vote with a greater level of convenience.
Follow-up. Thank you for that answer, Representative Schragi. The other change that is in this section of the bill changes the absentee voting station to an early voting station, and I know that there's significant changes on this. Can you speak to your intent with that change in the bill as well?
I'll refer that question with the chair's indulgence to my chief of staff.
Mr. Gunderson.
Thank you. Through the chair, for the record, Eric Gunderson, staff to Representative Schragi. Thank you for the question, Representative Vance. So this component of the bill was carried forward by legislation in previous years. My recollection is this might have actually originated from Ledge Legal as a statutory suggestion to clean up statute. But the legislation also provides the Division of Elections a regulatory authority to establish early voting locations where absentee voting can take place. So it wouldn't change the existing process or protocols. It would essentially rename them under one umbrella.
Follow-up? I believe that would make significant changes. Director Beecher, would you talk about the distinction between an early absentee voting and an early voting location?
Through the chair, Carol Beecher, Division of Elections Director, Representative Vance. By statute, early voting is different than absentee in-person voting. And
It is terminology. The terminology can be confusing because both of them are prior to Election Day, and so confusion reigns in that regard. However, there is a distinctive difference between the two. Early voting only occurs at those locations where we are able to have direct access to our voter registration system. It's required by statute that they be at our regional offices, so we have the five regions, and then we have extra places. We have a couple extra in Anchorage. We have several in Juneau at the state office building, for example. So in 2024, there were a total of 12 early voting stations, and these were opened 15 days prior. The absentee in-person locations, those are different because that is where an individual comes in and gets an absentee envelope, fills out the envelope, and puts their ballot in it. So it's a very different process. These are usually run by clerks and admin people at a municipal office or a tribal office, and they keep a log of the different ballots when they are cast. They are noted as having voted on that day, and then they send them into the division for processing. So they are quite different in the way that they are defined by statute.
One more question for clarification.
Yep.
I'm referring to Section 12 of the bill, and as written, it changes the term absentee voting stations to early voting stations. And would this, in essence, change all of the early absentee locations to early voting locations that would be required to have a master register?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, I'm going to ask Tom Flynn to deal with that question in case I'm missing something on if that designation would, what impact that would have.
Mr. Flynn with Department of Law, did you hear that question?
Yes, thank you, Chair. This is Tom Flynn of the Department of Law. Can you hear me all right?
We sure can. Thank you.
So to Representative Vance, I am also looking at Section 12, and the director's explanation of absentee in-person voting versus early voting, totally accurate. The one distinction I'll draw us to is under subpart B here in Section 12, what this is editing is an absentee voting station, which is something that has ballots for all House districts. So in practice, when the statutes refer to an absentee voting station, that's actually an early vote location, because you could vote for any House district. That's contrasted with what's described up in subpart A, which is just what we think of as absentee in-person voting. So I'm not sure that adds a lot of clarity. I think the bottom line is, in practice, this would not change absentee in-person voting to early voting. I think it would just extend what we currently think of as early voting.
I appreciate that, but I see more questioned looks across the room that you can't see right now. And I think this is something that a lot of us have been trying to clarify, but I'm just wanting to make sure that we have a clear direction on the changes that we're making, because they are two distinct different things. Like in Homer, for instance, people can vote early absentee at the Homer City Clerk's office, but it is not an early voting location with all of the ballots. And this is part of the area of confusion that people have experienced. And so change in the statute in this manner has is something that I want to be very purposeful about, because I foresee that it could cause sweeping changes by law that the division would have to implement that would cause a very dramatic fiscal note. But wanting to understand the intent behind the maker of the bill, did we, for the sponsor of the bill, is it your intent to change the process of the early votes versus the early absentee? To just allow the number of days, or are you wanting to change the early voting locations as well?
Representative Schrage.
Thank you, Chair Carrick, and through the chair. The intent was to change the period for early voting specifically, and I would just add that we, too, want to make sure that we are not introducing more confusion, that we want to simplify the process and ideally avoid adding any misunderstanding or confusion around this issue with something that we, too, have found to be difficult to grapple with. And so I just maybe would take this moment to say we want to work with committee members to make sure that this is written correctly, and I want to thank the Division of Elections for their collaborative approach to this bill so far and just being a resource and trying to make sure that we are addressing any concerns like that. So we look forward to continuing to work with you on this.
We have another question, I think, from Representative Holland. Oh, okay. We'll take Representative Moore's question, and then I'm going to go to our invited testifier, and then we'll do another round of questions if folks have them.
I have a few questions, but we can wait. Through the chair, just back to the ballot curing issues in the bill here. What are we expecting as far as ballot curing provisions to be equally performed across Alaska? In other words, how can we assure that the Alaskans in New Halen, say, have the same curing opportunities with those in Anchorage or the Matsu Valley?
Chair Carrick, can we go to Director Beecher to discuss what curing might look like under this bill?
Yes, Director Beecher.
Through the chair, Representative Moore, as you know, currently we don't have a cure process. What this bill would do is require the division to call, if we have the phone number, or email the individual and tell them what the issue is with the ballot. These are for absentee ballots. And then they would have an opportunity to provide the documentation to the division. The challenges that I think you're speaking to with our rural locations would be if it required something to be sent by mail. And according to this bill, we could send out a notice to them 5 days after Election Day, and that has to be back to us by 14 days after Election Day. With the mail system, this could be very challenging.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up.
Follow-up?
The UPS tracking barcode system in Alaska is interesting. So have you guys looked into that and researched how that is going to play into this?
Through the chair.
Chair Carrick, if I may. Oh.
Representative Schrage.
I heard my chief of staff jump in. If he'd like to address this, by all means.
Through the chair, for the record, Eric Anderson, staff representative Schrage. Thank you for the question. The only thing I will add is that we've had a good discussion with the Division of Elections and Director Beecher, and they have flagged this as an area that could use further investigation to ensure it meets the goal while ensuring it's feasible.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
And Chair Carrick, if I may add to that response.
Yes, Representative Schrage.
Thank you, and through the chair. I'd just like to remind committee members in thinking about the curing process that, one, many absentee ballots are turned in well ahead of Election Day, and so that would provide, even in an area where there are slow mail arrivals or delays of the mail system, it would provide an opportunity for those folks to have a large period of time to correct that ballot. The other thing I would note is that while there might be some disparities in how feasible that process is, especially close to the election day or just after to correct a ballot, that is still an improvement over the system that we have today, which is that you have no ability to cure your ballot. If you send in a ballot and you mistakenly put down the last four of your cell phone number instead of the last four of your social security number, and you realize that mistake a week ahead of the election, there is, as far as I'm aware, no ability to cure that ballot and have your vote be counted. In fact, I know of a very intelligent and prominent person who has a wealth of experience managing elections who did just that and was horrified to find out that their ballot would not be counted and that their perfect voting record was soured. So, I think we should always strive to have the best process that we can, and I think that this process is certainly an improvement over what we have today.
Great. I want to thank committee members for questions. If we could hold additional questions until we take our invited testifier, Michael Garvey from the ACLU is testifying online from Anchorage. Mr. Garvey, if you could put your name on the record and proceed with your testimony, and please, due to our time constraints today, we're limiting invited testimony to 3 minutes or less.
Thank you, Chair Carrick and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Michael Garvey, Policy Director for the ACLU of Alaska, testifying in support of House Bill 43 because it would take steps to ensure the voting rights of Alaskans and support voters as they cast their ballots. House Bill 43 contains a number of provisions that we support, including those to eliminate the witness signature requirement, a purely administrative requirement for absentee ballots that has selected many hundreds of ballots being thrown out. We also support provisions intended to expand access to voting and registering within 30 days of an election because they would help make elections more accessible. We appreciate Representative Chargi for introducing this legislation. Today, I would like to focus on the provision to establish a ballot carrying system, Section 22. This is especially important in light of a ruling in late January from the Alaska Superior Court in a lawsuit we and litigation partners filed in 2022 after thousands of ballots were rejected for minor errors in the all-male special election primary. The Alaska Superior Court ruled that it is the role of the legislature, not the courts, to direct the Division of Elections to implement a notice and care system. The decision makes clear that the legislature must act to establish this system. A ballot carrying system would address real problems by allowing voters to fix a narrow range of errors on ballot certificates. Hundreds of ballots are rejected each election because of missing or improper witnessing, lacking a voter signature, or a missing or mismatching voter identifier, such as a date of birth. Based on the Division of Elections Absentee Ballot Review Board report from last November's election, nearly 800 ballots were rejected because of defects that could have been corrected. We can't say how these votes may have changed election outcomes had they been counted, but Alaska's candidate and ballot measure races can be decided by very small margins. It is also reasonable to expect that ballot rejection rates will actually go up if the legislature does not establish a ballot carrying system. Because of regulations the Division of Elections adopted in 2024 to formally end the practice of accepting some ballots with minor errors on the envelopes. Additionally, a ballot carrying system would not be a radical policy change. The Division said in litigation that it could administer an election, including notice and cure, without decreasing election security, and never claimed that implementing such a system would be overly burdensome. In fact, the state already provides notice to voters that their ballots were rejected. It only does so after an election has occurred. Finally, ballot carrying would help Alaska better uphold our fundamental voting rights and improve the integrity of our election. During litigation, division officials agreed that providing notice and care might actually increase voter confidence because they know every eligible vote will be counted. Ballot carrying never allows an ineligible voter to vote in the election. It simply gives eligible voters a chance to prove that they are qualified and for our election results to better reflect the will of the people. In a state where voting is the cornerstone of our democracy, this is essential. We urge the committee to advance House Bill 43 because it includes this and other critical provisions. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey. And to keep us on schedule, we'll need to wrap up pretty quick here, but does anybody have any further questions for our testifier or the bill sponsor at this time? Vice Chair Story.
Thank you, Chair Carrick. Through the chair, to Mr. Gunderson, and perhaps it's to Rep. Schragi, but what I really wanted to make sure that we talked about today was all the rejections of the ballots that we had in Western Alaska, particularly rural Alaska, and what was primarily the cause for that, is that correction part of this bill?
Through the chair, for the record, Eric Gunderson, Staff Representative Schragi. I do not have the raw numbers here on what the primary cause is, but we know that the witness signature requirement played a significant factor in why those ballots were rejected. And establishing a curing system would help address that.
Thank you.
And Chair Carrick, if I may add to that.
Representative Schrage.
Yes, thank you. And I just have the reporting here on this issue in front of me. In this most recent election, we had 1,303 absentee ballots rejected. Of those, 512, so almost but not quite half, were due to a missing witness signature. So eliminating the witness signature requirement would address, again, not quite half of those rejections, and then having a ballot curing process would provide voters an opportunity to fix the remaining rejections.
Thank you.
Great. Looking around. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Rep. Carrick, Chair Carrick. Through the chair, Rep. Scroggie and Mr. Gunderson, reading over the fiscal note, what is the plan to pay for all these changes?
Yeah, I think that's a question best addressed by me through the chair. So fiscal note is approximately $160,000, which I think is a very modest price to be able to make sure that those some 1,600, 1,500 voters are able to have their votes be counted. I think this is, again, a fairly minor fiscal note. With regards to how to pay for it, like with anything that we put forward, policy change or otherwise, it's a balancing act that we will have to make as a body in passing a budget. And, there are trade-offs everywhere we look.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Thank you. I have questions regarding Section 8 that talks about it adds that a person voting an absentee in-person special needs or question ballot, the division may not reject the absentee in-person special needs or question ballot who registers within the 30 days on the grounds that the voter is not on the official registration list for election. This has to do with same-day voter registration, and what kind of protections do you have to ensure that someone is a qualified voter to be able to vote on election day?
Chair Carrick, may I direct that question to the director, please?
Yes, Director Beecher.
Carol Beecher, Director of the Alaska Division of Elections, through the chair, Representative Vance, if an individual comes in on election day to vote and their name is not on the register, then they must vote a question ballot, and that then would be go through that review process to see if they are eligible to vote.
Follow up. The bill, as written, says that they may vote in absentee, in-person, special needs, or question ballot. So how would this impact the verification that they are indeed a qualified voter?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, they would vote a question ballot. And the way that would be adjudicated is based on the identifiers and the information they provide on that question ballot certification form. And that is how the division would have to determine whether or not they were eligible to vote.
Follow up? I think perhaps maybe this is a question for Tom Flynn, because as this bill is written, it would not prohibit by law someone being able to vote in absentee or special needs. The current practice is voting by question ballot. But this would allow the other ballots that have a very different process. So I'm wanting to make sure that as it's written, how that process would be how it would be implemented and verifying that that person is indeed a qualified voter. Because as it's written is what will become law.
Through the chair, Representative Vance, the practice of the division, as it currently is, and as we anticipate it would be, would be the same process that we use for same-day registration on presidential, that if they come in and they are not registered to vote, then they vote a question ballot. But now I'm thinking about that. I could be wrong. So let's call in Thomas Flynn, please.
Mr. Flynn.
Thank you, Chair Carrick. This is Tom Flynn of the Department of Law again. It might answer your question, Representative Vance, to say that the division still checks voters' qualifications when they vote absentee in person, special needs, or any other means of voting that has that certificate that a voter fills out their information. The division does check that. So that might be how it procedurally would adapt to that if this were to pass.
Follow up. Isn't the distinguishing difference between a question ballot and the other ballots is that an absentee and a special needs already is a verified voter, but a question ballot has not been verified?
Representative Vance, that is a distinction, yes, but I think there would be enough information on there, and I think I'm getting towards process questions that the division and the director, we might have to consider more to answer fully.
What I'm looking at is how the law is written that the division would have to honor. And if we were to allow an individual who's registering on Election Day who's not verified, if we allow them to vote any type of ballot that we want, why would we continue to have distinct ballots?
Through the chair, Carol Beecher, Division of Elections. I'm trying to think through this process. I may need to call in Michaela Thompson, who is familiar with the absentee voting process. But essentially, the division to implement a same-day registration would treat the certification on the envelopes. All of these have certification. We call them floppies, but that paper copy on the front of these envelopes as a voter registration form, essentially. And that is what would be looked at to verify that the information, just like we do, excuse me, on any voter registration, we verify the social security number, et cetera, with DMV. And that is how the process would proceed to register them the same day. They would have to provide some kind of information, to your point about what kind of ballot, to verify which House district they are in and whether or not they are qualified to vote in that House district. But if please the chair, I would also ask Michaela Thompson to speak more on the process.
Ms. Thompson.
For the record, I'm Kayla Thompson, Division of Elections, Division Operations Manager. Through the chair, to Representative Vance's question. So currently, if anybody votes either a question, an absentee in person, or a special needs ballot, when they go into vote, they have to fill out the front of the envelope, which is essentially a full voter registration form. So they have to verify that they're a U.S. citizen, verify they're 18 years of age or older, give what residence address they are at, give identifiers and sign it, and sign the oath on the front of the application. The ballot, they then vote their ballot, which in this case, if they weren't registered, the division staff would look at the residence address they provided on the envelope to determine what House district ballot to give to them. And then once they vote their ballot, it goes inside that envelope, and then the envelope with the ballot enclosed goes back to the regional office. The absentee review board then reviews the outside of the envelope and looks at the information to verify if they were eligible to cast that ballot. And depending on the information given by the voter and if we have any information in our voter registration system, the board will determine whether or not to count that ballot.
Follow up. So current practice for someone who votes an absentee and special needs is that the review board will look to see if they're on the master register. But a question ballot is typically that they are not on the master register, and it and it warrants a further review. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, the question ballot would be they weren't on the register in the precinct they went to go vote at on election day. It doesn't necessarily mean they're not on the statewide voter registration form somewhere else.
But what this bill is written as is to open up to allow registration on up to election day. So it could be anyone who has not registered or who has moved to a different house district. And what I want to make sure is that these people are getting a thorough review because they may not be on the master register. And so the way this is written, I think, opens up a door to where it could fall through the cracks. Because the way the bill's written doesn't coincide with your current process. I think I'll put a period on that as a statement. I have grave concerns that the two are not matching. And I, for the sake of time, I will pause my questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you to committee members. I'm not seeing any further burning questions, but once again, we will be bringing this legislation back before the committee and able to take more questions in the intervening time and also at its next hearing. So thank you to Representative Schrage for joining us and to your staff and to Director Beecher on House Bill 43. We're going to take a very brief at ease to set up for House Bill 4 on presidential write-in votes from Representative Sadler. House State Affairs back on the record, and next up we have House Bill 4 on presidential write-ins from Representative Sadler. Thank you for joining us in the House State Affairs Committee, and please put yourself on the record and proceed with your presentation.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Representative Dan Sadler, House District 24, Chugiak, Eagle River. Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the State Affairs Committee for hearing this bill and for giving a fascinating committee meeting, fascinating stuff. House Bill 4 is a straightforward bill relating to elections with just one simple aim, to allow Alaska voters greater freedom to vote for the candidates of their choice for the highest offices in our land. This does so by allowing them to vote by write-in for their preferred candidates for President and Vice President of the United States of America. Now, generous access to the ballot is a bedrock principle of our democracy. Voters want and deserve to be able to choose among candidates that best reflect their political desires. And especially in an independent state like Alaska, not every voter wants their choice to be limited just to those candidates listed by name on their ballot. And however, while current state regulations do allow for state ballots to have write-in slots for state representatives, state senators, U.S. representatives, U.S. senators, they prohibit them for president and vice president. Now, that's because when the Division of Elections wrote regulations implementing a statewide voter initiative, it included language specifically prohibiting such write-ins. Now, I've got constituents who were surprised and upset by this when they went to the polls on November 5th, and I got some phone calls, my ears are recovering, but I'm introducing this bill on their behalf. Madam Chair, members, this is a good government bill. It provides no advantage to any one particular party, opposes no additional cost in the state. Specifically, I'll note the zero fiscal note from the Office of Governor, wherein the Division of Elections is housed. It widens elections to more candidates for the ballot, and I believe it strengthens democracy in Alaska. And noting other bills on the agenda today, this bill creates no new registrants or voters. It does not address the window of voting time. It does not touch on verification of voter qualifications. It simply lets people write vote in for president or vice president. I appreciate your consideration. I'm going to invite my intern, staffer, Dolores Neal, to read the sectional analysis. After that, we'll be glad to answer any questions in the committee. Thank you for your time.
For the record, this is Dolores Neal, staff to Representative Sadler. Thank you, Chair Carrick, and members of the committee. This is a sectional analysis for House Bill 4, Version A. In Section 1, the only change is on page 2, line 27, and it requires the general election ballot to offer voters the option for a write-in candidate for president and vice president. Section 2 begins on page 5 of the bill, and it provides the process in which votes should be counted. It follows the same rules as write-ins for governor and lieutenant governor. Section 2 also clearly establishes the standard for how votes should be counted for write-in candidates, including, at minimum, voters must write the last name of the presidential candidate for their vote to count. Section 3 starts on page 6 and adds a new subsection to our statutes that specifies official write-in candidates must file a letter with the Division of Elections that includes the candidate's electors for the Electoral College, the name of their vice presidential running mate, and the Alaska mailing address. That concludes my sectional analysis. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, as I said, there is a zero fiscal note. And so with that, I believe you could take advantage of our time by answering any questions. We'd welcome them from the committee members. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much for the presentation. Do we have questions from committee members? Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. Through the chair, I guess a two-part question. One is, I'm curious why this is the way it is. I suspect there was a reason that we didn't automatically already have a write-in for the president and vice president. I'm just thinking that there's some rationale for us to understand what happened or what changed. And then just procedurally, I'm assuming, but I don't know if there's any mechanics involved here. If we add a line for a write-in, I assume that this will also automatically create an additional column in ranked choice voting so that write-in person could be ranked. And I just don't know whether the bill provides the mechanics to make sure that that also happens so that if they do write in somebody, that there is also the ballot will provide them to vote on it. So kind of two parts. Why are we here in terms of what past decision got us to this current situation and just the mechanics?
With the chair's indulgence, Representative Collin, through the chair, I'll answer those questions in reverse order. In your supporting documents to your packet, you will see there is a sample ballot from the most recent statewide presidential election. There would just need to be added one more line to the presidential section, just as we have write-in lines for each of the U.S. representative, state senator, and state representative has a write-in. It would not require much more than just one very small line in addition. And you will see that currently under and for your second question, or your first question, actually, I would like to refer to the Director of Division of Elections for an explanation as to why we don't currently allow write-ins.
Director Beecher, welcome back.
Good afternoon. My name is Carol Beecher, Division of Elections Director. And the rationale behind not including the write-in for the presidential election, that regulation came into play in 2020, there are several reasons, one of which was that it is not required by law to have a write-in for the president or vice president. Secondly, when ranked choice voting came into play, the way that a write-in is calculated on a ranked choice ballot is that it is considered to be a single candidate. So, for example, we would call it candidate X. If enough people were to vote for candidate X, that it came up through all of the ranks, and as you saw in the last election that we had quite a few names in the presidential election component of the ranked choice. If enough people voted for a write-in candidate, and that would mean that they not only wrote in the name, but they have to fill the oval and write a name, then that would be considered a viable candidate for that election. And we would, in the division, have to look at every single one of those write-ins to determine what name that is, and then where they are ranked. And so for a presidential election where there are 350,000 voters, it would extend the time potentially at the back end of determining what that name was and whether or not they were a legitimate candidate, and that would be determined on whether or not they had done the paperwork that's required prior to even be a qualified write-in. So for all of those reasons, and because it doesn't comport well with the statutes having to do with the electors, for all of those reasons, the division at that time decided to write it in as a regulation not to allow write-ins for the presidential. There's also a side thing that hasn't happened to us, but we were
wondering if it would in this last presidential election, that the statute says that you have to be able to have enough of the columns, to your point, to allow for the ranking. And then you start looking at the size of the ballot. There are things that have to be on the ballot. And so we talked about if we had more that were going to be potential candidates, whether or not we would have to have a landscape ballot, all the different ways to try to fit all of those rankings on. And so we didn't get to that number, but it's conceivable it could happen.
Thank you.
Representative Vance.
Thank you. I appreciate a clean-cut election bill, so thank you, Rep. Sadler, for that. But I do have questions for Director Beecher on just more of this. Can you talk about the requirements for a write-in, that they have to send a letter, they have to be an official write-in? Would you talk about the timeline and what that looks like? Because I think that's something we a lot of Alaskans are kind of unfamiliar with, because the prior assumption is they could just put, you know, whoever they want on there, and that would be considered a viable candidate. But this requires a letter to the division, and I think we need a better understanding of that.
Through the chair, Representative Vance, yes, that is all there, but I do not have that information in front of me, but I'm happy to answer that question at the next hearing on this bill, or to provide that to the committee in writing on what those requirements are, so that the public can know what that entails. But you're correct. There are many things that people write in on a ballot that are not legitimate names for the write-ins.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Representative Sadler.
If I may, through the chair, kind of amplifying that, I think my understanding of the situation right now is that for a presidential write-in vote to count, essentially, the candidate has to have essentially registered. They have to register the name of the campaign, written a letter, given an Alaska address, and have the campaign chair signature. And to my understanding, if that is not registered with the Division of Elections, any vote that is not for a sort of semi-registered candidate is not going to be voted, and I don't think it needs to be tabulated, because they're not going to win. So,
one follow-up for the
follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, for clarification, Representative Sadler, what you're asking for is that the presidential candidates have the same write-in requirement as our other statewide candidate write-ins?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, that is correct, with the one proviso that in a presidential election, you vote for the elector, of course. You have to, no other candidate has to identify those electors. So that's probably the most important aspect of that registration.
Thank you.
Representative Himshu.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Sadler. How many states allow presidential write-in?
With your indulgence, Madam Chair, I'd like to bring my intern up to answer that question, if I may.
Welcome back, Ms. Neal.
For the record, Dolores Neal, staffer Representative Sadler. Through the chair, thank you for the question. Representative Himshute, I believe it's about 30.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up?
Thank you. And so this might be back for Ms. Beecher, I'm not sure. But through the chair, my other question is, did Alaska ever have write-in for president?
Chair, we probably should have the Director of Division of Elections to authoritatively answer that question. We can see what we think and what we remember, but, you know, it's not so good anymore. Need more chairs up here.
Back in the hot seat. Director Beecher.
Carol Beecher, Director. I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sorry. But I will call on Tom Flynn to see if he is aware of the answer to that.
Online for the hot seat, Mr. Flynn. Mm-hmm.
Through the chair, this is Tom Flynn again. My recollection is, yes, up until that regulation changed, there were write-ins allowed. So up until ranked choice voting. I might have misspoke. There were write-ins allowed for president up until ranked choice voting. Thanks.
Do we have any further questions at this time? Great. Thank you, Representative Sadler, and your intern for joining us in presenting House Bill 4. And at this time, we'll set House Bill 4 aside. And we have approximately 20-ish minutes left in our committee today. So what I'm going to ask from committee members is that we take up this last piece of legislation, hear the initial introduction of the bill, And then if time allows, allow for some questions today. If not, just allow for the introductory presentation of the legislation. The next bill is House Bill 63, which is also an elections bill from the governor's office. So I'd like to invite Director Beecher and Kelly Howell from the Lieutenant Governor's office. If you could both put yourselves on the record and proceed with House Bill 63.
Through the chair, my name is Carol Beecher, Division of Elections Director, and I have with me.
Good afternoon, Chair Carrick and members of the committee. My name is Kelly Howell. I serve as Chief of Staff for Lieutenant Governor Dahlstrom.
Good afternoon, everyone, and through the chair, thank you for the opportunity to present this bill. House Bill 63 is the result of a lot of questions and comments and feedback that we received over this last election as well as through other years of elections. And so there are a multitude of provisions within this bill. Some of them are new ideas, some of them you may have heard about before, and some of them are house cleaning, things that will make operations, just general operations and things for the division more efficient. And some things are to shorten times and improve the election process. The Division of Elections mission is to ensure public confidence in the electoral process by administering voter registration and elections with the highest level of professional standards, integrity, security, accuracy, and fairness. We take this mission very seriously, and we do everything we can within the division to make sure that we uphold the promises within this mission. This bill seeks to address and follow this mission. One of the provisions within this bill is a change to the regional educational attendance area elections. They're called REAA. Currently, these elections are held every year, and they are held in October. So on an election year, when we also have a primary election and a general election, they are in the middle of that. But they are the process of them is exactly the same as any other election. We have to have poll workers. We have ballots that are printed. We have early voting. We have state review board at the end of it. We have all of these different processes that are involved, and it is very challenging for the division within the constraints of the time of a primary, then the REAA, and then the general election. So the thought was, if we were to move the REAA elections to the odd years, that would eliminate having them in the middle. It would save money because they would only be every other year. But this would require changing the terms of office for the current board members from 1 and 3 year terms to 4 year terms. There are 19 REAAs. These are in unorganized boroughs around, for the most part, up in Region 4, which is the Bethel, Kuskokwim, North Slope, and then some over by Fairbanks. Multiple seats are elected at each year, and there are the same challenges and issues that we have with regular elections we do have with REAA. We did reach out to all of the superintendents. We haven't heard back from all of them, and so far it's kind of a mixed bag of what they feel about this. Some are neutral, some are in favor of it, and some of them still like to have the 1 and 3 year terms. The residency of voters, this is a continuing issue for the division and for the public at large on understanding what constitutes residency. We do hear continually about the overfull voter list, more people who are registered than live in the state. One of those things that makes that voter list larger than it potentially could be is the intent to return language that is currently in the statute. This bill will remove the intent to return language, and our concept is to reduce the confusion about it and to provide more clarity on what constitutes residency. This may not be the perfect solution. This is our attempt to try to come to some kind of a definition of residency that is clearer on who can continue to vote in the state and in the different House districts. Another provision of the bill is to remove the permanent fund dividend automatic voter registration, which we call it PFD-AVR. This system is composed of having when people vote or when people register for the permanent fund dividend and they apply for it, they are automatically registered to vote. If they are a new person to register for or apply for the PFD, or if their address has changed, then we send out a notice to them with an option to say that they don't want to be registered to vote. In 2024, less than one-third of those that were added to the voter list voted. So out of the 9,056 who were added, only 2,600 of those voted. It's an expensive program. It's an expensive program because of two things. The mailing of the notices, we send them out to, you'll see on the next slide, the actual 76,550 notices were mailed out. And these were to the new and the address change individuals. It cost $218,000 plus to do that service. That is a combination of the mailing. It's also a combination of our staff time that it takes, because even though it's called an automatic voter registration, it is not automatic. The division was not funded when this came into play in, I think, 2016. And so the process and the programming that was put into place was very minimal. The one component of the permanent fund dividend and automatic voter registration that we believe really adds to the list of voters that remain active is that just applying for a permanent fund dividend is an act of appearing to vote. And when you are appearing to vote, that makes you continue as an active voter. So you stay on the active voter list, even if the only action you take is every year that you apply for your permanent fund dividend. This chart, if you look at just the top line, this is a busy chart, but if you look at the top line, you can see that we mailed out 76,550 notices. Of those, 7,984 opted out. I'm looking at the top header and then the column. Of those new voters who were registered, there were 9,000, but only 2,639 of those voted. But the valid applications that we got, 394,862, those individuals who were not the new ones would be continued as current voters and active voters. Another component of the bill has to do with the voter registration list maintenance. We want to remove the second notice. So there are two notices that are sent out. This happens yearly around January. And the first notice is non-forwardable. The postcard goes out. If it comes back to us, then we are required by statute to send a forwardable notice. Removing the requirement for the second notice will reduce the time. Each one of these notices has a time frame for them to respond, so it will just reduce some time and some work that the division does on this process. We also add in our bill two additional conditions for the notices. One is that we would add that those who become ineligible to receive a PFD would receive a notice. And the thought process on that was that almost everybody applies for a PFD, so if they don't, we would mail them a notice to see if you still want to be a voter. And then those who receive a driver's license in another state, for the information that we're able to get on that, that would also trigger a notice to be sent. This would shorten the time to remove inactive voters from the voter registration list. Early voting, spoke to this a little bit earlier on the other bill, but they are quite different. The early voting, they both, and the absentee in-person voting currently, both start 15 days before Election Day. Part of the reason for these time frames that you will see in Alaska statute on elections has to do with the other processes that occur before that and after those days. So when you see a proposal for moving these days back, that means that other processes that are occurring in those windows of time also have to be moved back because there are time frames for individuals to register to vote or to register to be a candidate. There are withdrawal dates, and there are also ballot printing constraints that we have. The ballots have to be vetted, designed, vetted, ordered, printed, shipped. All of those things are the behind-the-scenes actions that take place before we can send out ballots. The early voting requires direct voter registration system access. That's why you have every single ballot there, because they can go into the system and see which area you are registered to vote in. This does not happen in absentee in-person voting. You get the ballot for that precinct or that house district. And the voters' information on an early vote is updated in real time, as opposed to the absentee in person, where those go through the absentee board process. Only the early voting in this bill, only early voting time is reduced, not the absentee in person, not special needs. It would only reduce it for those few days where the registers for the polling places have already been printed. So there's a potential of fraud that can happen. And one of the methods that we have to try to prevent that is that those votes are sequestered, so they go into an envelope, and we hold them until we are able to complete the voter history to make sure that they didn't also vote at the polling place. So eliminating the early voting for those few days while the registers are printed, would reduce early voting times, but it also would reduce potential for fraud of double voting, and also it would provide for faster results because we have to wait for the voter history to be able to count those ballots. Another provision of the bill is absentee votes or ballots are required to be received on election day. So why do we want this provision? We heard probably complaint bar none was how long it took for the ballots to be counted. And not why are all these ballots coming in after the election? Where are these ballots coming from? And why is this happening? And why are we so slow? By statute, in the primary election, ballots must be received by the 10th day after election. That means that we are not done even receiving ballots until 10 days after. We cannot begin processes. We process them to the degree we possibly can as they come in, but we can get them up to and on the 10th day after election. And the same thing for the general, although on the general, the overseas ballots can be received up to 15 days after election day. This bill would move the requirement to receive the ballots on election day, so thereby shortening all of that time after for us to process absentee ballots that have been received prior and on would take a few days after for us to process those. By mail voting option in communities of 750 or less, this was introduced a couple years ago. We're bringing this back and as a component of this bill, because we are looking for ideas and options for expanding voting options. This would not be a mandate. This would be an option when we run into a situation where a community has told us, and this has happened, where we have been told, we are not going to provide poll workers. This is not our problem, and it's something that the state needs to take care of. We can't afford to wait until the day of election to find out that the poll workers are not going to be there. It's not fair for the people who want to vote. And so we're looking at this as an option to cover those contingencies. We would have to put into place regulations on deadlines and those kinds of things to determine that. But there may be locations that want to have this as an option. Currently, we cannot because by statute, we are limited on when we can do a completely by mail. There may be communities that are small communities who really want to have in-person polling places. So we want to leave those options open, but we want to expand the ability to conduct elections in a way that works for all of our variety of areas in the state. We spend a lot of money and time mailing official election pamphlets, and we hear back on how many of them are piled up in the post office and shredded. And these are not cheap things to produce. Most of them are around $2, a little bit over $2 each. The ones that we send out to the rural areas are $5 plus each, and they are being shredded. So looking at the cost and the time and expense of printing them, this bill proposes to continue to produce it, but to have it only available online instead of mailing it out to all of the different households. This would save, as of this year, and the cost goes up every year because of printing and mailing costs, $844,855 this year it costs for us to print and mail the OEPs. We would continue to, as I noted, to post it online. And these are some of the additional changes. These are kind of operational things, but those of you who've been in some of our voting booths, you may not realize that those ones that are getting ready to tip over on you are because we are mandated by statute to have voting booths that are of those size, with the certain height, with the curtain a certain inches from the floor, and they don't make them anymore. You can get them on eBay occasionally. And we put out an RFI trying to find anyone who could make them anymore and what it would cost, and we were not successful. They just don't make them like that anymore. So this would eliminate the restrictions that are in that statute of the size, and allow the division to purchase booths that would replace the old ones that we have that are available for us. Currently, compensation for election board members has to be by regulation. This puts us way behind the curve, and we are not able to be flexible when other entities like boroughs are paying way more for election workers than we are, and so it's challenging to deal with the salaries or with the payment for our board members. Postage paid return envelopes, you'll hear this on many of the election bills. That's clearly something that's needed. We also do not want to reject special needs ballots when the error on it is from the representative. This bill would eliminate that. We also have some archaic methods of delivery for election materials that were really narrowly defined. It has to be by USPS mail. This measure would allow us to have more flexibility on how we could get election materials delivered and received. And we would move the absentee review board reviewing process just a few days earlier to 10 days instead of 7. And then there's a strange requirement we found out in our recount that requires that during the recount, any ballots that are received during that time period must also be included in the recount. And this bill would remove that provision, so we would not be counting late arriving ballots. And that's this bill and HB 63. If you have any questions, I'm happy
to
answer.
Well, I would love to take questions, Director Beecher, but we are unfortunately out of time for today's House State Affairs hearing. So I'm going to encourage members to please direct questions either through your office directly or through our office, and we can provide answers to the committee membership as a whole. And at this time, we are completed with House State Affairs for today. Any member comments before we adjourn? Representative Vance.
I can't help myself, but I heard the word democracy over and over again. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to allow some comments. I appreciate everyone's wanting people to engage in our election process, but I would like to clarify for the record that we are a constitutional republic. We use the democratic process, but we are not a democracy, and our founders made sure that we are not a pure democracy that relies on mob rule. The constitutional republic was designed specifically to give a voice to the minority, and I think that is important that we do not lose that in the process of our conversation on civics and engagement in the election process. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Well, certainly far be it from me to not hear minority perspectives and take them into serious consideration. So thank you to the governor's office and staff for having our bill hearing, and to Representative Sadler, and to all of our bill sponsors today. I'd also like to just remind all committee members and put it on the record that House State Affairs is accepting hearing request applications. We will hear legislation that we get requests for. So far, we've had a very small number of bills referred to us that actually have hearing requests submitted, and so that will be the trigger point to get legislation on the calendar for this committee. So our next meeting is this Thursday, February 13th at 3:15 here in room 120. At that hearing, we will be taking public testimony on House Bill 21, pre-registration of minors, House Bill 43, which was Representative Shragi's elections reform bill, and House Bill 10 from my office on faculty representation. With no further business to come before the committee, we are adjourned at 5:09.